The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Alistair Coburn.
I'm Carmen Medina.
This is David Andelson.
This is Heidi Helfand.
This is Jason Little.
Hi, this is Dr. Jen Fromm.
This is Jim Highsmith.
Hey, this is John Willis.
This is Joshua Kariyev.
Hello, I'm Lisette Sutherland.
Hi, I'm Lois Kelly.
Hey, y'all, this is Lisa Atkins.
Hi, this is Martin Fowler.
Hi, this is Ryan Jeffries.
Hi, this is Johanna Rothman.
This is Sandy Montwini.
This is Troy McGinnis.
Hi, this is Daniel Bacanti.
This is the Agile Uprising Podcast.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I am this evening's host, Jay Hersko. Joined with me, I have James Gifford.
What up?
Andrew Leff.
What's going on?
Chris Merman.
Howdy.
And first time joining us, Brad Stokes. Brad, welcome.
Hey.
Hey.
Is this really Brad's first go?
Yeah, no. First.
Whoa. Yeah,
no, he was on the Safecast.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that. So the topic of tonight's episode is version one just released their 12th annual State of Agile report for 2018. So what we had a show about this last year where we discussed the results from the 11th annual. But now that we have two data points of comparison, we're going to go through some of the things that jumped out at us. We're going to have a little bit of discussion about things that we noticed. Some of the changes in the report, there were some interesting insights. There were some things that changed, not necessarily for the better. So I'm just going to go around the room as we go and just call people out so we can offer opinions. So the first thing that's part of the report that I want to cover off is the respondent demographics, which is the first section of the report. There was noticeably this year, there was a slight increase in the number of large companies that they actually questioned for this survey. It's up by 2%. There was also a small decrease in mid-sized organizations, down 1%. And there was a decently large increase in the amount of North American companies that were surveyed at plus 5%. All the rest of them showing to a decrease. Now, first question, do you guys think that may have something to do with some of the different results that we're seeing? And this might be an interesting question for Brad, because he's the only one of us that's not in the North American continent. As we go through some of this detail, we're going to see some decreases in places that I think were a little unexpected. So I guess, Brad, when we go forward, we're going to look to you to maybe give some insight as to what you've seen from your side of the world, because maybe that answers, maybe the increase in North American respondents answers some of the questions that we're seeing.
Okay. I would actually say that with the organizations, there's been a big push in Australia, for instance, moving into the banks and the banking sector and even into that business agility space. So big organizations uptaking Agile makes sense. On the little front, definitely there's still we've got Pivotal in a bunch of other places that are just pushing hard on that side of things. Don't know if that answers your question, but it does seem to ring true.
Well, when we get into the details, we'll take a look. So now I want to talk about the respondent types. So this year, there was a 15% increase in the number of respondents that self-identified as a scrum master or an internal coach. There was a 9% decrease in the project in people self-identifying as a project or program manager, and down 4% as development staff. Now, I just wanted to call this out, so maybe we should keep this in mind as we go through these results, because you're looking at these survey questions through the lens of someone who is more often than not either a scrum master or an internal coach, as opposed to someone who's either an executive or the development staff.
Well, so let me just, call out the elephant in the room. Like, could they just be, with the proliferation of methodologies, with the increase of large companies per se, right? So if business agility or thing, frameworks like SAFe or Scrum or whatever are proliferating in more companies, right? are we talking to the same people and they just have different titles now? I don't know. I meet more people that identify as a scrum master than as a project manager now when I'm coaching, but I don't know that that is always the case. I mean, does anybody have a different experience?
The names are so tricky anyway. I mean, these days, if you're in, say, trying to do the Spotify model, an ad hoc coach is a scrum master. It's just a different name, same horse, different color. So title's not so much. It doesn't surprise me that, I mean, this is hosted by version one. They're a productivity tool that definitely scrum masters and people at that level are going to be using. If you're looking at even the Jira, I can't imagine too many devs jumping on and joining in. In fact, they're only, 13? That's 11 developmental staff.
Yeah, 11%.
That's a bloody sort of small sample size.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing I caught was the C-level respondents stay the same year over year. 3% of all their respondents are C-level. So I would, going forward, I'd like to see a little bit more response from that side. That layer of the layer cake, I think that would give an interesting insight. First thing I want to dive into, really, is the, which I know Merman and I poked the hornet's nest talking about this topic, distributed teams. From the 11th annual to the 12th annual, the percentage of respondents saying that they had some distributed teams practicing Agile actually decreased from 86% to 79%. Does that jibe with what we're all seeing out in the wilds?
I got 14 teams in India and heading to 40 by the time the transformation's done. But I mean, that's a company strategy. We're all co-located, so we still promote co-location, but we've definitely distributed our workforce across the two continents.
And that brings up a good point, Gifford. Maybe the term of distributed teams isn't really clearly defined, because I think of distributed team as a team where there are members in different geographic locations. Whereas in your use case, if they're all co-located at an offshore site, they're technically, to them, they're onshore because it's a self-contained team.
I hate this debate because it's like, are we talking about dispersed teams, which means they are an agile team that are dispersed across frickin' everywhere, or are they basically I got people on the West Coast. Technically, if I'm working with them from the Horsham office, they're on the West Coast. They're a distributed team.
So maybe
definition sucks.
Maybe this is just my redneck brain kicking in, but like I felt like you just said the same thing with different words, right? In my mind,
that's why I'm saying this definition's garbage.
Yeah. So, Drew and I work for, you know, the largest, you know, management consulting company in the world. So we've got, you know, there's 450,000 of our air quotes coworkers across the globe, right? So I have nothing but distribution. In my coaching efforts, even one of the programs I'm coaching right now, I've got a release train engineer that's in Atlanta. I've got a project manager that's in St. Louis, a product manager that's in St. Louis. I've got an architect that's in Dallas. And then I've got teams that are, you know, agile teams that are distributed all over the globe. Right. So like, that's a reality for me. What I find interesting is, you know, Maybe we should talk about this later, but like the percentage of respondents, right? Like, so the number of people that respond to this thing is, I don't know that percentage of change is that big of a shift to me. Like the point is that distributed teams is the norm for what we face in the industry. And yet everything that we do says co-location. Mm. And we've put almost like, everybody loves to make fun of Safe, but like Safe at least has put some effort into like, hey, here's how to do our thing if you have distributed teams, right? Like most of the time they just say, don't do it. And they don't give you any material to help out with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think it's interesting and something you touched on, right? So we just all had a little bit different of an opinion around what distributed team means. So when you look at this from the assessment standpoint, how did they define it? And how did that response solicit that right? So what are we defining as distributed team? So I think we all got to that point, but we've all answered what that definition is a little bit different.
You're right.
There's lots of ways to poke holes at this, and that being there, right there is, hey, are we all dealing in the same currency by talking about distributed teams?
Right, because that would explain a statistical anomaly. That would explain differences in feedback year over year. It's a very good point. The next data point, which I felt was fascinating, and I think this probably impacts me more than anyone else, the respondents that are using Agile to manage outsourced development delivery. That actually showed up last year. I missed it somehow, but it went down from 51% to 40%. So I would rely on you guys because I've been at my current engagement for quite a bit, but this is basically what I live. It's using Agile to maintain delivery with a vendor who's using Agile, who's not even on the same continent.
You experienced the same thing when you were working in Delaware.
True.
You had a vendor that was managing, you were using it to manage a vendor who was delivering.
Yeah, but something. not to this extent where I basically get a black box.
I ran an engagement with, Andrew was with me on that dumpster fire, but when we were doing Agile with a gigantic ERP company located in Germany. And it's distributed Agile, managing a vendor thing, it was not Agile at all.
I guess
I just don't understand the difference between outsourcing Agile and distributed Agile. Because in my mind...
So think about it this way, Mermin. Distributed Agile, my explanation would be distributed teams would be you have a bunch of people all working on the same team. Some may be full-time, some may be consultant, some may be H-1B contractor, whatever. When I look at using Agile to manage, this could be an it depends type question, when it says Agile to manage outsourced development, it's basically what I'm doing, where I'm using an Agile methodology to manage a vendor, putting them into the construct of a PI, putting them into the construct of an increment of a sprint. I'm using Agile methodologies to manage what the vendor is doing.
Contract negotiations over customer collaboration.
So I guess this is where my sphere of experience is a little bit limited for this conversation. I don't know I don't know one without the other. If they are, vendors are almost the norm for, which is in my mind, like, why isn't the number higher? And because,
right,
you know, IT efforts almost always include vendors. I mean, hell, I'm a vendor, right? Like, you know, most of us are, a lot of us are vendors here on the board, right? So just weird to say like outsourcing of efforts. I mean, that just seems like regular IT efforts to me, because that's, vendors are used more in every state across the board.
Yeah. I mean, but you look at it, ThoughtWorks, right there. Anything that ThoughtWorks is doing is...
Yeah. Or Agile Accenture.
Accenture. I don't actually think of Accenture as a development company, but
I mean, you'd be surprised.
I don't need to give you guys to give me the brochure, but I think of a ThoughtWorks as they're delivering you a product or a set of applications or development services, and you may use Agile to manage that.
There you go.
I don't know. I just think it's a stupid question. To be quite candid.
Fair enough.
Why do you think it's stupid? Let's hear it. Why do you think it's
stupid? Is it a stupid question?
You lost us, Brad.
Yeah, I lost you.
No, I was actually listening for the response. I was going to say, is it a stupid question? I can think of multiple things where you have external developers that are doing work for you. I mean, a classic case is your agency scenario. You might have a local team that's doing Agile in their local environment, but they have an external dependency that they use for exploratory testing. They might use it for putting together a piece of media. That goes out, here's the spec, come back to me, we'll iterate on it as we get it back, but they're not actually tying that necessarily to their own sprint. It's simply an external dependency. That would be something that I could imagine that you'd have that, because you are dealing with, I have X, I need Y back, I want this design back to me by XYZ date. You're not using any Agile methodology for that. You're literally just contracting somebody to do a task. and get it back. So maybe that's where that's playing into it.
The other
paradigm is, if I have, I've actually worked in this, is I had a couple of testers that were working with us, and they were part of our Scrum team. They were brilliant. And we incorporated them into them. They were an external dependency, but they were managed using the Agile methodology. It's just a different thing. If you're using them as an external dependency, say a host, a architect for a database that is an external vendor, they're just going to give you that database whenever it comes. It's not going to be every 2 weeks. And it's a weakness in the program, but you can't really control for that. If you go into the subcontinent, there's still a lot of places there that you say, here's $5,000, come back to me, and here's the specs up the wazoo. It never works, but that's what people do.
Good point. I think this question ties back to the last question, where it's worded quite vague and it leaves itself to interpretation, which could really change how we're actually viewing the results. So let's move along. So the next section of the report is company experience and adoption. And this goes into the reasons for adopting Agile, benefits, et cetera, et cetera. The first thing I noticed is, one of the first questions is, how long have you been actually doing Agile? And the year over year increases, less than a year actually went down, which should be expected. It went from 15% to 10%. 1 to 2 years went up from 25 to 26. 3 to 5 went from 32 to 35%. 5 plus, 28 to 30. So it looks like whatever these companies are doing that are responding, looks like it's sticking. This iterative way of thinking, this agile way of working, is actually sticking.
Or the same people that responded last year are responding this year, right? I mean,
true.
With the number of Scrum Master certs that they hand out every year like candy, like they should, I would hope that, I mean, there should always be newcomers. You know what I mean? So yeah, this is not to denigrate the data or the numbers. It's just a matter of, if we don't keep getting newcomers in with fresh blood, fresh eyes, fresh whatever, right? What are we saying to our methodology and to our way of working, right? Like, we're just going to keep recycling the same old shit.
Jay, renew your PMP.
But so I don't know, maybe I keep getting wrapped around the axle with this, but when they say agile, you know, doing agile, or however you said it, you said it a certain way, Jay, say that again.
Practicing agile development methods. Okay. Percentage of respondents practicing agile development methods.
I don't even know what that means.
That sounds like doing agile.
Doing Scrum. We have a stand up. We have Jira, and we show things every 2 weeks or a month or 6 weeks.
That is, y'all are going to depress me. Like, stop that.
Wasn't that an Andy Hunt quote that everybody Andy does? Hunt. Everybody
we
does
do half Scrum.
Half a Scrum, and we all use Jira.
Yeah. So Taco Agile, right? Titles and ceremonies only. So
I got to write that down.
That checklist approach that, yes, we're going through the motions, but are we doing things different, utilizing the Agile spirit, right? Do we have the Agile spirit that motivates us to want to be different and change? And, you know, we're not improving unless we're changing.
So the next question may actually lead into that answer. So the next question was reasons for adopting Agile in your organization. There were some interesting increases. So the choice of accelerate software delivery went from 69% of the respondents to 75%. Enhance the ability to manage changing priorities went from 61 to 64%. Big jump in delivery predictability. This went from 30 to 46%, which is a big jump. Improve engineering made a nice increase, 21 to 25%, and reduce project cost, 18% last year, 24% this year. So the first thing that jumped out to me was the predictability gain, where it seems like everybody, that's why they want to do what we do, is to become more predictable, delivery predictability, which does that even
so stupid.
Does that compute?
I think it's a good way to measure. Predictability is good, but where's the business value? How are we meeting business value, and how are we measuring business value that we're actually delivering value, not just software?
Yeah, those questions come up later. Yeah, where they start switching the value. The other one I saw was a jump was improving engineering. That went up. So my question is that really an interest in XP practices, the root of where all Scrum and Agile comes from? Or is it a side effect of companies realizing that the DevOps piece is a vital part of it?
Well, here's my problem. Where the hell is delighting customers?
We didn't get to that question yet.
Why isn't that on there as like a freaking reason for adopting, okay?
No, but I think it's a good point to call out that if our technical practices are improving, right, that's part of the process, and we want to build better people at the end of the day. And if our developers are invested in being better developers to become agile, you know, people to make the organization more agile, it all ties into it. But I'm just baffled at how do you measure that they're improving?
Well, I mean, you're more predictable. You have better quality.
Well, improved engineering, failed builds, commits to trunk, mean time to resolve, all those DevOps 101 type metrics, which are.
Yeah, but it's more than DevOps, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's software craftsmanship. How are we building mastery and purpose?
Is it concerning that we're still getting increases in reduced cost and accelerate delivery? It's not more things faster, cheaper. It's the right thing in the right time. Is that still you've got the people out there saying, no, agile, it's going to get us things twice as fast and half the cost.
I did see to that point, one of the ones that had a decent jump was the response of reduced project cost went up from 18% to 24%. Why are we still talking about projects? I guess it's vestigial organ where companies have no idea how to fund.
I don't see that there's a big difference between, because we're not just talking about software anymore. We're talking about more than that. We're expanding out into a world of projects where there isn't a fit tangible product, but there is a project. There might be a marketing campaign that you're doing.
Right.
That's a project. It's a product if you took it. I mean, it really doesn't matter what you want to call it. You call it a horse, a cow, a dog, a cat. It's something.
Yeah. Can y'all hear me now?
Yeah. You're good.
Unfortunately. Okay.
Yes.
I hate you too, Gith. So maybe we should, for the purpose of this conversation, forget the word project and just more focus on the controlling of costs, which to me seems like a somewhat of a positive, because finally we're seeing the elimination of waste as a value in Agile. And I'd like to, you know, I don't want to call it any one specific framework as being the herald of that, but there are some that try to focus on specifically some scaling frameworks that say all the time that we spend doing shit, there is delay in that, and that costs money. Anytime we have to stop and wait, it costs money. So regardless of whether it's a project or a product, and I'm turned off by the word project as well, Jay, but if we say, look, if we forget that part and just say we're reducing costs overall, that's kind of a good thing for the industry, right?
Well, but how often are people actually maximizing the work not done? If I give you $1 million, you're going to spend it all. It's the Santeria effect. Like I have not seen a company come up with, you know, Andrew, you were there when we had the MVP discussion, and they're like, the whole thing's the MVP. And I'm like, well, clearly your customer isn't asking for any of this. So how is that actually an MVP?
Right. So I think that plays into the point of, to me, reduction in cost doesn't mean much. It's, are we spending more money or are we spending less money, but we're actually eliminating the stuff we don't need to do because we're more focused on what we should be doing, taking into account whether it's feedback from the customer, internal, however it is, we're crafting what we're delivering in a much better way where we're eliminating a lot of the wasteful time, effort, and development, even conversations, right? Even discussions and meetings cost money. So we're having much more focused conversations and delivery, and we might be spending more money, but the ROI is, the return is higher.
Yeah, that touches on, so we can, I would suggest we save this for the end in terms of what is this, like what's the whole holistic value of this report kind of a thing, is that we have questions that are worded the exact same year over year for historical context and also comparison context. But like Drew and others have highlighted, like, are these questions really worded the right way, right? Like, are when we speak of outsourcing and distribution, like, are we wording the right way? Are we, like Drew just called out, are we spending our money in the right way rather than are we reducing costs? I think that because companies, like gigantic companies, are paying for Agile now, they're buying Safe, they're buying, you know, whatever, at, you know, Scrum at Scale, whatever you want to call it, Nexus. So as a result, these gigantic, like, there's no way you can have a group of 125 people working on something and now they're not be a, like a little bit of waste. So maybe instead of, I think to Drew's point, what I feel like I heard him say was, rather than focusing on, are we wasting money? Is it, are we spending our money in the right direction? Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Or am I just shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic? Nope.
No, that makes sense.
Hey, watch out for that iceberg.
And that ties to, so the next question was, what are the perceived benefits of utilizing Agile? The two biggest ones that saw reductions, drops, in percentage of respondents that you chose these, the first one was project cost reduction. That got cut in half, 56% of respondents last year, 22% this year. Project risk reduction, 74% last year, 47% this year. So if I'm just interpreting those numbers in a vacuum, right, it would say that, okay, so now companies are realizing that going Agile does not necessarily reduce costs. It does not necessarily reduce risk. It's just you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. You have different costs and different risks out there.
No. From the risk standpoint, you're learning about your risks very early. You're going to learn about your risks continuously. That's one of the benefits that we've had. Like literally, we're remediating risks on a daily basis where I work because we're finding them sooner, faster in the process. So in turn, we're spending less money. Like, so I fundamentally disagree with the whole notion that the reason for one of the benefits of Agile is reducing risks. You're identifying a whole lot of risks sooner, faster, before it becomes a complete problem.
We're not reducing them. We're just making them more visible. I mean,
but by making them visible, you're not reducing them, but you're nullifying their impact, right? You're mitigating their impact by finding them earlier, quicker.
Because if I've seen those, we've all been there when we spent 9 months developing something and then holy crap, we can't freaking integrate it. And then we blow the project plan out another 3 months to actually be able to integrate it. And we've spent, another $500K on that $1 million that we were given.
James, I don't like you insulting my job history. This offensive.
Hey, James, what would you do if you worked for 1,000 days and didn't integrate a release? Like, what would you do?
You'd get fatter eating a lot of junk food in Philadelphia. Moving along.
I'd rename myself Jay Hersko and then still never be able to spell my last name because there's no damn vowels in it.
But one of the things I wanted to ask, because we've all, looking around the room, we've all been, we've taken our lumps. Does going Agile truly result in a cost reduction, in a cost of doing business reduction?
Hold on.
Brad, you go first. In your experience.
Yeah, that's me. My experience is limited. I'm a couple of years working in the Agile space. Being a truly cross-functional team, there is a cost to that. But the thing is, if you are delivering software and you're delivering it the right thing and the stuff that actually has value sooner, the cost is offset. The cost is offset by so much, it's not funny. The risk is offset. I'm no longer getting to the end of a project, handing it to testers, throwing it out of the wall, coming back at me 15 times in a row. So initially slightly more investment, but payoff a hell of a lot sooner. But I'm not saying that we're delivering everything either. So I'm not saying faster, cheaper. I'm just saying right thing sooner.
What do you think, Merman?
So maybe we're, again, this conversation of wording keeps coming up. And what I like about it is that we're uncovering what the words mean to them, right? So cost reduction, again, to me speaks of, I always think, because the companies that I end up coaching are these giant companies that you have to have like billing codes and project IDs and these big, work down left. What's the WBS is what we
work
have.
Work breakdown structure.
Yeah. Oh my God. You did not just say work breakdown structure on that.
I did. Always. Yeah. Lef and I have them for our company and it's painful.
Woo!
But so everything that we do gets built to something. I mean, very rarely do we get. So as a result, I think there's waste across the board, right? So, you know, I think that the in the end, reducing costs is just applying transparency to them. If we are saying, tell me what you, in fact, I just had this exact conversation with a program leadership team today. They said, and this is still a traditional situation where tech and business aren't getting in alignment, right? It's like they're blaming each other. It's not a safe environment. But business is saying, I just want technology to tell me how much have you spent, where is it going, and how much is it going to cost me to run this group month by month at a run rate kind of a thing. And they're like, I've been asking for it for months and they won't tell me. And I'm having to threaten to talk to their boss's boss in order to get it done. That to me is a significant, or that's a sign of waste. If you can't say we've spent X amount of time, we've spent this money, we're working on this thing, however you break that down, it's still waste. And the more resistance you have to that, the more it, and I can't say this for sure because there could be valid reasons for it, right? But on the whole, if you're trying to keep your black box walled off, maybe there's a reason for it, right?
What do you think, Lev?
Oh, I mean, I just struggle with how do we know we're reducing cost? How did we look at it before? How did we measure it before? So how do we actually know we're reducing anything? So where's our baseline? How did we actually do this? Did we fund the next 5 years of projects and literally predict the future and fail every time? Or are we funding a team that gets X amount of dollars that delivers X amount of features from a predictability standpoint? And we know that the value that we're getting in return, yeah, it's costing us more money, but we're getting a lot more. So I just struggle with understanding truly what reduced cost means without understanding how that was phrased and how they baselined right. Their original ask. So in my experience, if I was to answer it, I would say no, it does not reduce cost.
Gifford, 5 words or less, because we want to move on to the next topic.
Impossible to do.
Impossible.
I mean, the reduced cost thing, like I've seen it work, but it's, you know, it's when they actually have a set of actual business outcomes. They know what their value, they're doing early testing to prove out an idea before they even spend money. They can get a pulse on where the heck they need to go with this large feature. So instead of delivering the entire print feature, they put out a button that goes to your default printer, and they found out that 4 people in the entire user base use it instead of the 7,000 they projected would use it. And it was going to benefit things. So yes, we spent $50,000 to validate that, but we didn't go spend $1 million to build the whole entire print capability. Like, yes,
got it.
That is where I've reduced costs. We definitely didn't deliver stuff that the customer didn't need that wouldn't satisfy them. But how many of those big ads, like you go to Merm's company, how many people are actually thinking like that? Like it's a struggle.
Not many.
It's a struggle to get any, but like modern companies, big overhead companies where we've got gigantic hierarchies, and I'm going to go on a tangent. I'm going to stop myself. Let's move on to the next topic because
fair enough.
This
fair
is enough. A rabbit hole. I will get the pulpit out and preach.
So, Elmo. So next section is practices and methodologies. So jumping out, what methodologies we're just going to glance over. Scrum and XP are obviously still at the top of the pile. Based upon their respondents, the utilization of the Agile UP, DSDM, FDD, feature-driven development, their DOA, they've dropped down to 0, which means next survey they'll probably not even show up. One interesting thing, though, the hybrid approach, self-classified hybrid approach is up 8% to 14%. So I don't know if that's people who don't really understand that they're just doing Scrum to fall, or they really are creating their own safe spot of dadless, I don't know, whatever.
Or maybe they're doing Scrum with other things because Scrum doesn't cover everything. It's a framework.
True.
It's not the soup to nuts and be all and end all. It needs other stuff to really fill it out.
True.
And 100%. GIF had his hand up.
I mean, but that's the difference. I mean, you're either doing Scrum, like, I mean, at NextGen, we are building our own methodology. Like, we are, like, that's the goal of the company, is that while they see value in all these things, they understand that at the end of the day, it is the combination. It's Scrum plus, it's, you know, we need Lean in there. So we are building a framework around a meta approach of pulling in the best practices that we need to solve problems.
Yeah, but when you look at that, though, the hybrid approach, I subscribe to it, but it also, I hate it, because if we don't understand the basics, we're already bastardizing something that we didn't understand, and we're helping to support the lie that we need to work differently, but we're just working the same. So we're going to call it a hybrid approach.
We started with Scrum and we layered it in, but we took a 10-week PI and cut it down to 6 weeks and called it a gaggle. So you do 3 sprints and it's basically a customer introspection point where we've got the customers coming in.
Yeah. And I wasn't directing that comment at you, Gip.
I mean, I get it, but we are starting out with core foundational stuff and then saying, all right, well, we need a increment, but I don't need 10 weeks. I don't need a release train, but we like the idea of an increment. And what is an increment, and what can we afford to have customer interaction? Right now it's 6 weeks, and I can do another 6 weeks, and then I can have a gap week in a quarter. So now we've literally got a planning cycle that is 12 weeks in duration, and then it opens us up to a week of exploratory, like learn what you want to learn, continuous improvement, planning.
Right, so the experimentation, right? Like you have the experiment, you have your hypothesis, you have what you think the outcome will be, and then you're going to go through that retrospective and literally look what happened, and then learn and pivot if you need to and take some changes and run the next experiment. So that's the point I was trying to illustrate, is if we don't know how to base it off of something and we haven't really understood why we're doing the basics first to run an experiment, we kind of lose sight of calling it a hybrid because it doesn't fit in any one category.
Yeah. But can't we just do Spotify? Like, can I just go do what?
Stop. I want to hit you. I literally want to come to the computer and hit you. That was the stupidest thing you've ever said. Let me just say one thing before we move on. Can we all sort of say that almost anything is a hybrid? Like, can't anything be argued as a hybrid?
Yeah.
My Jetta isn't a hybrid.
I don't like it. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But I think you can run the hybrid with, as long as you understand the principles and practices of why you're running, right? So the understanding of why we're doing this, what problems are we looking to solve? And these are the principles and practices that start here. I mean, and I know we want to move on, but so I have lots of teams on my train. I think maybe 2 people knew what XP was.
Right. That's just a knowledge gap, right? We can, whatever we do should, to Drew's point, everything that we do should serve an outcome that we're trying to help our teams, programs, clients, whatever you want to call them, right? And if we're not identifying those outcomes, we're fucking failing them.
Yeah. So before we get to outcomes, that's halfway down. Let's talk about techniques. So this is a question of the Agile techniques that all the respondents employed. Big gain right here, Kanban, up from 50% of the respondents to 65. So maybe the industry is learning what any most good experienced coaches and practitioners know, that Kanban truly is the way to true effectiveness with a pull system with flow. Dedicated product owner is up as well, 55 to 63%, which I, based upon some of the places I've worked where they've tried to shoehorn people into the PO role, I wonder, is that dedicated PO someone who's coming from IT?
I don't even understand that question. How are you a product owner and not dedicated? It doesn't make any sense.
No. Hold on. I completely disagree. I have yet to find someone. I've been in the last few years of coaching. I have yet to find someone that's dedicated to anything.
No, I agree with that, but don't create a metric around it. Like, seriously, it's like you're not a little bit pregnant. You either are or you aren't. So you're either a product owner or you're not. And that is you're there to serve in that role. And if you're not doing that,
but,
I think the word dedicated is catching them up, though, maybe, right?
But it could be the level of dedication, because I've got, you know, there are times that I've seen product owners over 2-3 teams that are all working on the same product.
Prioritize your work, right? So at that point, I don't know how you carve out 20% of your day to be a product owner.
No, I'm talking about dedicated to multiple teams. You are a product owner and you're dedicated to this product, but it's not like you're dedicated to one team.
Right. So if you take the less model, literally you're a product owner for what, 8 teams? So yes, that can work.
That's awesome. I want to try that. That's awesome.
It'd be hell. It's
a compelling idea if you want to dig into it.
Yeah, I like the, well, that's another episode for another time. I like the less stuff.
We need Larman on just to go freaking A-pass.
Because I like a lot of his ideas. So the other things that jumped out at me, product road mapping and story road mapping are both up almost 10%.
Thank God.
I guess organizations are finally learning, realizing that that's the key to building the right thing, is getting your hands wrapped around what your roadmap looks like for both product and the story level. Portfolio planning, up 10%. And Agile and Lean UX is up 8%. So it looks like Lean UX is finally getting the attention it deserves.
Nobody from my current client apparently responded to this survey, because that's not the case.
I wonder if who is actually doing user design with some of the vendors we use, because some of the stuff is quite interesting looking.
So you just made the cardinal sin mistake there, Jay.
What?
Is UX the same as UI?
Oh, don't. We literally just started getting hate mail. Like, we haven't even released this, and there's.
I want to make fun of you now, more than usual.
Sorry.
His beard is out of control.
The wife hates it.
Okay, so we'll skip over that.
Your wife hates you. That's what's happening. That's
the next episode we're doing. We're agile marriage counseling, stand-ups and all that. So engineering practices. Coding standards is up 8%. Again, I guess it's a realization that you're building all this all on sand if you don't take the good coding standards, technical practices. The categorization of refactoring, test-driven development, automated acceptance testing is all down, but the DevOps bucket is up. So again, this is one of those splitting hairs. Look at Lef, he's losing his mind. It's probably a splitting hairs thing.
You can't have one without the other. We've got DevOps, but we don't have any unit tests.
So now let's...
We don't know.
Enough with the engineering practices. Let's hit on the fun stuff. So successes and metrics. So how is success measured in an Agile project? Okay. So the first thing that jumped out...
On time and on budget.
How's velocity at the top of this thing?
There is a choice for velocity. But wait a minute. Velocity went from 62% of the respondents said they use that to measure success down to 42%. That's 20% decrease.
It's still at the top of the list.
No. If I remember correctly, I got to find it. So while I
It's still at the top of the list, Jay. Velocity.
I know customer user satisfaction for this one. From scanning that list.
Where's my net promoter score?
NPS. To be fair to GIF. So customer satisfaction and business value delivered are the top two, but literally one percentage point behind it is velocity.
Yeah.
And right behind, and the next one is budget versus actual cost.
But I mean, the point by me bringing up velocity is people are starting to realize that velocity is not a true measure of success at all. It's just a trailing metric to see how well a team does. One of the things I saw that really was sort of disheartening, using work in progress as a measure of success, down from 32 to 16%. So that sort of doesn't make sense, because on one hand, we just talked about how Kanban went up 15 percentage points as a methodology used, but then the concept of WIP went down. Brad, you're looking at Kanban.
Yeah, it was. I was going to say, is it Kanban? Kanban's synonymous with task boards. So maybe the methodology that they're recognizing is a Kanban board, but not Kanban itself.
Good point.
Difference?
Yes.
Really? Merman touched on this. Business value delivered is up 23 to 43, so that's good.
At the same time, right? If I was just looking at the bottom end of the survey, right? Like the worst thing. If we look at things like, so again, some of this could be wording, right? Like earned value. In my mind, like earned value is more should be higher than business value, but maybe it's just people only know the term business value and not earn value, right? And also product utilization. Like, are people actually using the stuff that we're making, right? Mm-hmm.
So speak real quick around business value. It's one of the things that I constantly struggle with, having companies define business value. So again, this metric to me is just puzzling, because if you go into an organization and ask them to define business value on the stuff they're delivering,
right,
it's literally like you're talking in a foreign language.
Well, you got to go in there and pass out the Lean Startup and hope they read it, because at some point in time, like, they need to understand that they need quantifiable business outcomes to actually achieve some level of business outcomes, so that everything is measurable and tangible. And I'm doing this feature because it's going to bring in X users over the next 3 months.
It's funny you say that whole thing of like, we're going to like measure what users use, kind of a thing. The truth of the situation is that we, like, stakeholders base their decision on little data or no data at all.
You just base it on the hippo. You get the biggest hippo in the room and you're like, we're doing this.
At the last client I was at, I literally was working with the data and analytics program in the organization, right? Like, the vertical of our job is to measure how people are using our stuff. And one of the leaders pulled me aside and said, I've got a secret for you, Chris. We produce all of this data, and it's either not the data that we need or people don't use it to make decisions. So how do I see value in what I do for the company? That's troubling, right?
Did he go walk out in traffic right after that discussion with you?
She had a drink in her hand, but, you know, that's fine, Ryan. It was, you know, not a vaporizer like you're holding, but, you know.
I don't know. If you aim it, you'll hit it every time, right? So,
last one on this page was how success is measured for agile initiatives. The good news is business value, delivery, and customer satisfaction up big, huge gains. Means people are looking in the right direction. Product delivering full product scope down 20%. Again, the agile thought is taking hold. So
it's a good, there is such a thing.
It's a good thing. Now let's get to the fun part. Let's get to scaling. So with the methodologies and approaches, SAFe is obviously still the big dog out there. Scrum and Enterprise Scrum are both up there, close seconds. Not close seconds, but seconds. Les and Dad have both posted double-digit gains, and the percent respondents using it. So maybe they're taking hold there. Lev just alluded to it. I missed that Larman lecture when he came through Philly, but I've been reading into Les, and there's some interesting stuff there. So maybe some of that is taking hold. And last but not least, Rage. I don't even remember what that stands for. It's DOA. It's not on the report anymore. So that's...
Wait,
I don't know.
Rage? R-A-G-E? Hold on, I can tell
rag,
you.
Rag status?
Recipes for Agile Governance in the Enterprise.
That's it.
What? What the hell is that?
It doesn't Brad matter. It's dead now.
Brad wins the Googling award.
Look.
I'm looking at the spreadsheet. It's written out there. So
look, if you guys, I could give you a talk on descaling enterprises, but nobody will accept it because, you know, it doesn't make any money. But right. At the end of the day, we should be trying to descale our enterprises and get back to freaking what the
I
hell.
I completely disagree. You're so wrong. You're such an idiot.
So, but no.
But you came to that talk in Agile and Beyond.
I know, it was dumb. That, I hated it. I love
that. That's because your dumb Texan ass couldn't do math and figure out, I give you $1 million, your team costs this. How many teams can I afford? Simple math.
This is one topic I'm legit going to put a pin in because I want to come back and do a unique – I want to do an episode on this because it's an interesting topic.
I think this space will shift over the next 12 months as well. We've just had big Scrum Alliance come out with
Scrum at Scale. Venture,
Scrum at Scale.
Yep. That's Sutherland's rolling it out at Agile 2018 this year. And
he's been rolling that thing out since freaking Brad, what Scrum Gathering Phoenix. Like, freaking finally get it out.
I just muted Gifford. What were you saying, Brad?
No, I was actually agreeing. Scrum at Scale. It's out there. It's has Scrum Alliance behind it now. So there's a joint venture happening there. Enterprise Scrum, it'll be, with Mike's very, very sad passing, whether that will continue. That might actually fall off the radar because you don't have the founder just being there. Whether the Scrum at Scale also affects Less or Nexus or those others or swallows them up or that sort of thing. So 12 months, this is going to be a different space.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. Next section of the responses, which I thought was pretty interesting, is the five tips for success with scaling Agile. So last year, the top five in order were internal Agile coaches, executive sponsorship, consistent process and practices, implementation of common tools across teams, Agile consultants and or trainers. So that was the top five last year. This year, internal Agile coaches is still number one. Number two is consistent process and practices. Number three is implementation of common tools. Four is Agile consultants and or trainers. And five is executive sponsorship. So I've been shepherding this whole conversation. I think we got things a little screwy here because I'm convinced I had a blog post on this. In order for an Agile adoption to scale, to succeed, you need to have your internal change champion, your external change champion, and your executive change champion. And when you put executive sponsorship all the way at the bottom, if all the Morlocks are going to want to build a new tower and the Eloi aren't buying in, you're spinning your gears. I think you need someone from the top pushing down to say, yes, we are. The analogy somebody used to me in a conversation last week was, we're Cortez in the new world. We're burning the boats. And we have to go forward. And if you don't have that, people are going to drag their feet. They're going to do, you know, fake Agile. They'll put the perfume on the pig. I don't think this is.
Sadly, when you said Cortez, I went directly to MTV Sports and Dan. But, you know, hey, but so kind of looking at this list on the right there, where the current survey, like one of the things that is kind of going right with the where I'm at is we do have executive sponsorship. We have a total focus on internal coaching and hiring internal coaching and only using consulting as a means to, we can't actually find these technical skills. So we need to bring consultants in. The whole notion of common tools and consistent processes across the enterprise has been extremely difficult. I mean, the company I'm at is a company of acquisitions. And so literally you have all these different cultures and flavors, and maybe I'm in a unique situation with how many different, I mean, I got nine different company cultures coming together to in this transformation. But, you know, while that dynamic kind of creates this problem, if we're all looking at Scrum plus and branching out from Scrum and doing Scrum well. And, you know, we started looking at kind of, as we've kind of gone through this and gone through various iterations, we've kind of started looking at Larson's, you know, you got Diana Larson's maturity model and then smashing that together with leading Agile's idea of a base camp. But like it's how you drag these people through different phases. We have early adopting teams that
I think this list is complete garbage. I really do. I think all this is nonsense. And to me, yes, you need someone leading the change. But we should be building organizations of leaders and mentors and coaches and influencers and all these things. None of that is illustrated in any of this. So where is the mindset that, hey, we want to build better people to make our organization amazing, to deliver awesome stuff? None of this does any of it. You could call it whatever you want, any framework. And I can make your waterfall faster at the end of the day if you were doing that. But so this to me is just nonsense. It's just noise. It's just a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, I hate the idea of the whole, I mean, consistent process and practices. I get the point where you put the bounding box and you say, you know, you basically function as the bumpers they put when the little kids go bowling, right? You don't want to throw the ball in the gutter. But I to define from top down the process and the practice by which you're going to do this, I just think that's a recipe for success. Even if you don't have Gifford's 14 and a half cultures all mixed together, even with one culture, that's brutal.
The whole thing is guardrails. And it goes, if I go back to that Scrum, the Scrum thing, it's teaching people that I don't need to teach you how to wipe. I just need to tell you that you need to wipe at the end. To go back to the Scrum Guide changes.
That is awful. That is awful. Legit awful, Gifford.
At the end, dude, I totally did that on the Scrum Guide update. But at the end of the day, it's about creating the right boundaries and guardrails of working in your organization.
The way I word it in a less lewd and ridiculous fashion is all I'm doing is taking away your ability to throw gutter balls, right? You've got all the lane to work with. Just don't throw gutter balls. That's nothing to do with fecal matter or bathroom activity or any other like things you shouldn't be talking about in work, Gifford.
At the end of the day, we just want to teach people how to fish, right?
Yeah.
Are we talking about fly fishing or are we talking about bass fishing?
Shut up.
Pencil tucky. Here we go.
On the flip side of all this, I love this list because it keeps me employed.
Absolutely. I had a fellow coach tell me in a workshop or 2 weeks ago. He said the best thing that we can do he was kind of co-facilitating this workshop with me, and he said, what's the best environment for learning that we can create, and really challenge the leadership of this program to say, how are you enabling learning? And it may seem weird, and it may seem awkward, and it may seem counterproductive at times, but are you learning, and are you enabling others to learn? That's all we're doing.
Yeah, but you know what sucks about that statement too? Is that you constantly have to prove that learning is a good thing. Like, why do I have to prove? That should just be, right?
Yeah.
Why do I
have to? I mean, we have to prove our jobs every freaking day.
That's true. Mm.
You need to prove that mustache is legit.
It's legit and amazing.
So rounding out the rest of this section, there was challenges to agile adoption. The big one last year was, I think it was philosophy, and that's down 10%, which was a barrier to, where was it? Company philosophy or culture at odds with core agile values. That's down 10% in all the respondents, which I think is a good sign. That means that I guess the orgs are becoming accustomed to the change. And then the last section of the report is obviously the money for version one. It's the tooling. Jira is still obviously the big dog. Everybody and their mother is using it. CA Agile Central is down/rally. That's down a bit. I'm not surprised, because I would think that maybe the merger sort of rally being sold, I think maybe some people have a bad taste with CA.
Computer Associates, you might as well just, that thing's like the kiss of death.
I mean, like, if you had a bad experience at Unicenter and now you're using Agile Central.
Yeah. Look, they slapped an integrator to Claire's in and called it, hey, look, you got a PPM and you got Rally. Look at that. We can manage project management and Agile all at the same time, baby. Woo! That's a collective bundle. Sign me up.
Was it Quality Center on this like survey at one point in time?
Yeah, it is. HP, where is it? HP QC ALM. Last year it was 12% of respondents. This year it's 14, up two ticks.
People still use that piece of shit?
Would you say?
Oh, yeah.
So is AGM on the list?
Yes, HP's Agile Manager.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's down 3-2%.
That's ass. I saw it at Phoenix.
There's a piece of software called Agile Manager.
Oh, it sucked ass. We saw it at Scrum Gathering Phoenix.
So my client uses that.
Oh, so
no way.
Oh, that sucks.
We just, have any of you all heard of, I don't know how new on the block they are, but some tool called AgileCraft. Have y'all heard of them?
Yeah. AgileCraft's not bad. Axosoft's not bad. You should check out, if you're looking for a new testing tool, you should check out Zephyr Enterprise.
I'm not interested.
They also have a shitty plugin for Jira.
I thought Merman was going to say, have you guys used IBM Rational? Doors, and I was going to force end this podcast. I was going to delete it, and we were not going to release it.
Look, but, you know, I think we should go back to Excel and sticky notes and Microsoft analog project. Visualization.
Project has gone up 1%.
Yep, project's up. TFS is down one, but Excel holding 46%. 46% of these respondents are still using Excel to run their Agile enterprise.
I'm not lying when I say this. I had a so there's a Safe Train that I kicked off that they were trying to talk about how do we make our program board virtual, and they're like, we really love the red string. How would we make that kind of, you know, digitized kind of a thing? And someone goes, what if we just recreate the program board using Microsoft Project? And I stopped and I thought, please, I'm not going to be the first one to talk, but someone please say this is stupid. Like, please, someone. No. Please. And someone was like, that sounds brilliant. We'll be able to drag it around the screen and the string stays with it.
No, Merman, I literally.
At least they didn't say PowerPoint. I would have went with PowerPoint. That's an easy one.
We all have, at least between right. Andrew.
Gifford, you tell me here. Gifford. You were saying, Brad?
I just said, no. I was just saying, Project now has an Agile extension to it as well.
Yeah.
It does. Wow. It does.
Yeah. Well, Gifford, you were saying?
I mean, Andrew, Merman, and I all have a mutual friend that used to use PowerPoint as her method of managing Agile projects, and she would put all the stories on it and actually draw fancy PowerPoint slides. Because she was opposed to.
So, do I want to know who this friend is?
You technically dated her for like, I don't know, 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. Now,
shut up.
But that does bring up a good point, though, Merman. You bring up a good point. The whole team board with the string, right? The safe string and all the dependencies and whatnot. I am really surprised that with version one and Rally being built so close to safe as a methodology, there is no technological representation of that in the tool. I am really surprised that that's not there, because that's one of the cooler things that comes out of doing that live mapping exercise, that I'm really surprised they haven't recreated that in the platform.
Well, that was the whole point of the release planning board in CA, and that was the whole point of those that feature. But it doesn't do as good as it is not as good as post-it cards on a wall with string and tape that you walk out of PI planning with. Yeah. So nothing as good as that.
But the program board is an exercise. It's a tool to get the team to actually utilize going back to the board and changing and keeping that visibility. Because as soon as you make it electronic, most people aren't invested in actually going and keeping it up to date, right?
True.
So the team as a collective has to want to keep that board up to date to make sure that there is visibility. So There is logic behind that. At least I think so. Whether it was intended for that purpose or not, I guess could be debated. But I know I coach my teams to really invest in the board and making sure that they're utilizing it in that way. And if they're not, that's on them. But it can create that visibility and conversation at the board, right? It can become the water cooler conversation.
Yeah.
Maybe Dean can add board buddy as another role to say 5-0.
I hate you. Shut up.
and with that, we're going to wrap it up. So I'm going to go around the horn. Gifford, any shout outs, upcoming events, speaking engagements, anything?
I've been so busy on the continent of India that there is literally no concert or no conferences in my future.
Merman?
But hey, I'm going back to India next week.
Merman.
I'm not sure if this is going to come out by then, but at the end of May, I'm going to be at Keep Austin Agile, but the first week of June, I'm going to be at Agile Dev West in Vegas. So if you're coming to that, find me and Lockard and, some other fun folks there. It's going to be like a killer lineup. And then of course I'm going to be in San Diego for Agile 2018.
Andrew?
Yeah. If you're ever traveling the countryside and you want to grab a beer or drink or something, hit me up. I don't have any speaking engagements and really not all that important, so no one wants to hear me talk. So
He's a great ramen date.
Okay. I'm more than happy to have dinner or drinks or something if anyone's in the area and wants to have a chat.
Brad?
I was having
drinks. Come and join me for a coffee on Tuesday morning at Sydney Lane Coffee. Other than that, hit us up on the Coalition and join the conversation.
Perfect. And I have nothing exciting to report, except that the final day-over-day lineups for This Is Hardcore just got announced in Philly. Merman, I'm eventually bringing you to a concert with me.
Yes.
But you have to wear cowboy boots. So on behalf of On behalf of James, Brad, Andrew, Chris, and myself, I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for giving us your time. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a review, rating on iTunes. If you'd like to join the discussion, like Brad said, hop on coalition.agileuprising.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Once again, I want to thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you all.
How to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.